We'll end this hour where we began, thinking about Iraq. Two voices told us emphatically this hour that unless something decisive happens on the battlefield, Iraq and possibly Syria will cease to exist. In their place, there will be possibly three nations: Kurdistan, a nation yearned for by Kurds since Ottoman times, a Sunni caliphate controlled by the Iraqi militants who call themselves ISIS, a fanciful idea that goes back to the beginnings of Islam itself more than 1,000 years ago, and a united nation for all Shiite Muslims, something first imagined in 1501 when Iran came into being. To discuss the possibility of these scenarios and also the situation on the ground, Faisal Istrabadi joins us, director of the Center for the Study of the Middle East at Indiana University, former Iraqi ambassador to the United Nations. Ambassador, welcome.
My pleasure.
Is this partition? I've been asking this question since last week, but I'll ask you as well.
It could be. The Iraqis have to decide collectively, not just the political class, but the people of Iraq have to decide whether they want to live in the same country or not. If they do, then there are certain ramifications to answering that question in that way. If they don't, I do not believe that Iraq will break cleanly into three separate countries. I think that although the Kurds in the north are more viable than the rest of the country if Iraq falls apart, for the rest of the country, Somalia, I think, is a much more likely scenario than a clean break into three states.
Well, before we take a look at the delightful scenario of Somalia that you raised there, the Kurds seem to have already made their decision, and they decided some years ago that they'll wait this out. But they've always been pretty open in their belief that they'd rather go it alone.
I have no doubt that if you had a referendum, a free and fair referendum in the Kurdistan region of Iraq, that the overwhelming majority of the Kurds would vote for independence. I think, however, the leadership has calculated that having self-rule, having autonomy within an internationally recognized border is an advantage to them. Remember, it's a landlocked country. It would be a very small country tucked in between much, much more powerful neighbors. So there are real reasons that it has been beneficial to them to stay within a united Iraq. Whether that calculation has changed in the last week, you know, we're going to see reasonably soon.
And Turkey holds those cards. If a Kurdish flag flies over Erbil and Kirkuk, it's conceivable that the Turks will have something to say about that.
Well, not just Turkey. I mean, I must say that right now the relationship between Iraqi Kurdistan and the current government of Turkey is very good. In fact, Erbil has a much better relationship with Ankara than Baghdad does. But it isn't just Turkey. It's Turkey, it's Iran. If the rest of Iraq, let's assume Kurdistan gains independence and somehow the rest of Iraq is able to pull back from the brink and hold itself together, and even if Syria ever manages to reconstitute itself, the long-term perspectives are that a landlocked, small Kurdistan could conceivably face tense relations with all of its neighbors.
Let's talk about the Shiites for a moment. Is it possible that the Arab-Persian split between Iranian Shiites and Arab Shiites in Iraq would prevent a real sort of unification there? Even Iran taking the holy cities of Najaf and Karbala as a kind of a protectorate?
Well, that the Iranians have influence with particularly the Shiite political class is beyond question. But remember, one of the myths about Iraq that you hear from time to time is that the Iraqi Shia are, you know, Iranian or in origins or in tendencies, and it's simply not true. Something like 85% or 90% of Iraq's Shia are Arab, not Persian. And there have always been tensions between the two. And I'll simply say that the Iraqi Shia, had they felt any loyalty towards Iran, could have brought about the end of the state of Iraq in as far long ago as 1980, during the eight-year war between Iran and Iraq, when Iraq's Shia bled and died for Iraq.
Would Iran try to grab the Shatt al-Arab waterway, the Basra port, and basically control the entire oil spigot there at the north end of the Gulf?
Well, I mean, it's always possible. But on the other hand, if there are situations you can imagine when it might do that, if my scenario comes to pass of genuine chaos on the Iranian borders, they might be tempted. But Iran right now is also trying to work out its relations with the West, including the United States. In the short run, I don't think it wants to jeopardize those kinds of economic and commercial ties in exchange for buying a whole lot of trouble for itself.
Although the Somalia scenario that you describe, I mean, this isn't the Horn of Africa, off in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, believe me, I have a heart that bleeds for the people of Somalia. I've been to Somalia. But this would be a chaotic, warlord-driven land in the middle of the richest oil producing region in the world. I mean, it would almost be like setting a Somalia down in the middle of Europe. It would be Switzerland as Somalia.
I think so. I think it would be absolute chaos and would constitute a genuine threat to, it would be chaos for the Middle East, but it would also be a genuine threat, I think, to U.S. and Western interests and vital interests, as you say, oil and natural gas and so on. You know, in Somalia, the pirates go out on the seas to kidnap people and hold them for ransom to make money. In Iraq, a state like ISIS, as you were describing, would control natural resources such as oil and gas. It's a nightmare scenario. It could fund itself. And even in sort of warlordish areas, whatever, it's a nightmare scenario. I mean, just imagine Iraq as dropping down to Somalia, north of Saudi Arabia, and the other countries bordering it are Jordan, Syria, and Turkey. And remember, Turkey is a NATO ally. It's just a nightmare scenario not to be contemplated.
Ambassador, just looking back at all of this, remembering the casualties during the war, the scenarios that were spun out as the U.S. made its decision to go in, this just seems like an utterly heartbreaking waste of so much.
Yeah, well, let me count the ways. You know, it's been I have to say, as I look back on the last 11 years, I told a colleague the other day that it seems none of my aspirations for Iraq have come to pass. My worst fears have all come true.
Faisal Esterbadi, it's great talking to you. Perhaps on another occasion we'll have a slightly more upbeat conversation. Inshallah.
Inshallah, from your lips to God's ear, as they say in New York.
Faisal Esterbadi is director of the Center for the Study of the Middle East at Indiana University, former Iraqi ambassador to the United Nations.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.